Start with the simple one first, then we're gonna go the last one, we're gonna go the complicated one. Obviously, a lot of people are waiting for that. So we start with the body cam and an update for the body cam.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you. Can you hear me okay, Joan?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So we have some good news about body cameras. We had obtained 8 body cameras that we share through a federal loan and a complimentary loan from Hudson River Bank and Trust. We were running into some issues with the sharing and downloading time and things like that. So we applied for a grant and we are going to receive, we've got a tentative approval to outfit the rest of the department. So we'll have at least 10 more body cameras, the charging station, so that everybody on patrol can be outfitted with a camera. And we're very thankful for that from the, it's at no expense to the city. We received original training from a representative of Axon, who flew in a trainer from California to train us originally on the cameras. The only cost to maintain, of course, is licensing fees and storage of data. So we're going to go forward with the purchase of remaining cameras, and you'll see them on the street.
On 43 and 45 Sloan.
Whoever is not talking, please mute yourself. All right, Chief.
That's the update on the body cameras, Duan.
Okay, how about that, like a body cam? You guys change anything, like, particular after this incident happened? Like, you know, the shot of the camera and stuff like that? Or you just continue with the quotes?
You know, our policy, which I think you reviewed the policy, the camera's on when they have interaction with the public. So incidents like that would be captured on our body camera, according to our policy.
Council member, have any question about the body cam? I guess not. Okay. Second agenda, training for uses of force during air raids. So, how you guys arrest, you know, like a docking and stuff like that. Can you explain a little bit? Because, you know, everything has changed. So what kind of force do you use and stuff like that?
Okay, so I've been reporting to the police committee here for a number of years about updating our policy. So before the incident in Minnesota, we had already changed our policy to reflect use of force, proper use of force and adherence to state law. Also things like having a fellow officer report the abuse of power, abuse of force was already in our policy. We had loaded that in there. And also what I've talked about at the different meetings is this accreditation that we've been working hard to maintain has a lot of state standards that are out there in front of, let's say, other states. Other states still have things like chokeholds and stuff in their policy. These things are gone. And they're not part of our modern policy. So we're under all sorts of guidelines by the state for training. The policy that we put in place has been vetted. And also I've sent a copy of it to the city attorney because I'd like everybody that wants to see our policy be able to see it. So as soon as she reviews it for appropriateness, I assume you'll see it out there on a website so everyone can review it. But I was happy to say that a lot of these things that have come to national light were already addressed and updated within our policy at Hudson Police.
Any question for council on this training?
I don't, can I say something? So I'm not sure if it's specifically pertinent to this question right now, but there there was a list of questions sent to the committee and the council from a citizens group. And I had forwarded that list of questions to the police commissioner, and I was hoping that he would be able to address some or all of them. So is the police commissioner here?
He's not on this week, but he did see the list as well as myself. But we also have to remember he's not a paid employee, so he can only do so much. But the council and the chief should also have answers to that information.
Okay.
I speak at these police committee meetings with the permission of the commissioner. So I have read the questions that I received this morning, and I'm going to answer. I'll answer them to the best of my ability, but with the understanding it's with the tacit approval of the commissioner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
So, okay. Well, I guess back to the agenda, I guess maybe, so we'll go over the list after the agenda.
We're going to go be under new business, Rebecca?
Yeah.
Good.
Just procedurally, to stick with Juwan's agenda at the moment?
Okay. Chief?
I got off track there. What's the question, Juwan?
Okay, that about the number 3 on the agenda.
Oh. Okay, mental health and substance abuse cases. Okay, so I will say that our department per officer encounters more instances of mental health cases than, let's say, the average police officer in this area. They all have DCJS approved training. They all have field training and encounter this at a higher rate, I think, than anyone in the area. Now, as an example, this year alone, we've had 68 calls of dealing with someone who's emotionally disturbed. 55 of those resulted in securing the person under 9.41 of the mental health law, where we can actually secure a person who's endangered to himself or others so that they can be brought for evaluation. So I'll say that the guys have a lot of hands-on experience with this, far more than any police agency in the area. So we get the initial training at the academy, and we get a training throughout their career, but also a lot of hands-on experience. We work in concert with Columbia Green Mental Health Association, MCAT. We work a close relationship with MCAT owing to the amount of responses we do. Columbia County Health Department, Twin Counties Recovery Service, and also the Department of Social Services. So we work a lot with the mentally disturbed, emotionally disturbed people, and we respond accordingly. And regarding substance abuse, we're trained, of course, in Narcan. We've had thankfully no overdose deaths this year. We've only had 2 reported drug overdoses in the city, and it's already almost July. And we've only had to administer Narcan once this year. So it's interesting to me that the drug instances are overshadowed more by the emotionally disturbed. But that's the statistic so far.
Please mute yourself. Council, any question on this?
Juwan?
Yeah, go ahead.
Chief, you tossed out an acronym about the training. I jotted it down as GGCS. Can you just elaborate on that, what that means? None of us are familiar with that.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
I hear you. So what happens is, I can't speak to other states. New York is very progressive in terms of administering, overseeing their law enforcement agencies. You know, when I say we're accredited, you know, something like less than 40% of the agencies in New York State are accredited. Something like 2% in the United States are accredited agencies. So in New York, you know, we're very progressive in terms of oversight. So the Department of Criminal Justice Services is what DCJS stands for. And they're the overseer of law enforcement agencies throughout the state, to include the state police and sheriff's offices. They're a database source of information, updated training ideas and policy changes. They keep us in adherence to the law. So we answer very much to the Department of Criminal Justice Services, especially through our accreditation process. Agencies that are not accredited can go off the tracks developing policies that aren't in adherence. But our department, for four cycles in a row, have received our reaccreditation. So that's what DCJS is all about.
Okay, thanks. I didn't understand that. Thanks very much.
Okay. Agenda number two, relationship between HPD and county sheriff roles and responsible. What control does HPD have when county and state officer are involved?
Okay, so every agency has a different mission statement and responsibilities. The sheriff has oversight of the jail primarily. They do a road patrol, and of course, responsible for patrols throughout Columbia County, along with a host of emergency management situations. The sheriff is the top law enforcement agent, that and the district attorney for the county. So our relationship is one of them complementing or supplementing our force. So in a case of a natural disaster or a crime, a large-scale crime, we can count on the sheriff to supply the material, equipment, and perhaps personnel needed. And the same thing more or less with the state police. The state police mission is to go into rural communities that cannot supply their own police protection and to provide patrols. So the state police, for example, in this last homicide, probably put thousands of dollars of manpower into that investigation, as they have in the past. So we go to the state for those large scale need for resources, and they're there. And same with the sheriff. Very rarely, if the sheriff not been able to assist us with the whole manner of issues and problems. Like I said, everything from weather related to large scale crimes. So I would say our working relationship is very good, unlike maybe years ago. So it all benefits the residents of the city of Hudson.
Okay. Council?
I actually wanted to go back to the previous question just for a minute.
Which one?
Is that okay?
Which one?
The previous question, how is HPD trained to handle mental health substance abuse calls. I was just curious if the chief could talk about alternatives to HPD being the first responder for mental health or substance abuse calls, and what are some of the other scenarios that can be in other places or in other circumstances.
Okay, so like the development of MCAT in the county was fantastic. And also, you know, the rise of PTSD with soldiers returning home. Working in concert with...
Sorry, MCAT?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, MCAT is the mobile crisis from the Mental Health Association.
So what happens is social workers will respond to the scene, allowing the police to step back, and they're highly trained in handling these cases. So, you know, they've been around for a couple of years now. We have a great relationship with them. And it's another tool we have to, quell a situation. And we use them a lot. Same with the social service, social workers. We have a very good relationship with Columbia County Social Services. And social workers are often at the scene of various things here in the city.
Are you saying that it's that HPD has to call social workers in, or like chooses to call social workers in?
We often do, because a lot of these folks, unfortunately, are coming through the system over and over again. So we're familiar with them. The social workers that we call to the scene are familiar with them. We do use them quite a lot.
All right. Agenda number 5. Overtime for HPD. How many hours? You know.
Okay, so we're allotted. We've been allotted for a number of years now, about $150,000 in overtime, and we were at $96,000 spent through today. The thing that you requested, Dewan, was May 7th through June 19th. And our overtime report shows $40,888. So we backtracked and looked. That's high for that period of time. Almost a little over a month. So what happened?
How much was it this 2 months?
$40,880.92. That's May 7th through June 19th.
Okay.
And what happens is we saw, a storm like it happens here sometimes. We had, not only did we have the Terrell Starr homicide, we were having emergency orders for COVID coverage. That creates shift shortages and a lot of overtime, a lot of work done. So that's high. But at the current rate, we would still come in very close to our budget, barring whatever.
So this budget, how do you determine the budget?
Well, we go through every year I go through the budget with an apportionment and go through, we submit our budgets and then they get whittled down and we negotiate and talk about different areas that we need and where we can cut back. So it's the standard budget process that all the departments go through. So, but we've been more or less capped at about $150,000 for a few years now, my memory. And if officer salaries go up, that cuts into the overtime, how many hours we can actually get on the road out of overtime. So we've been within budget since I've been here, haven't had to ask for extra money for overtime, and it's going to be close, but it's hard to determine, who could determine COVID, or we don't, of course, don't want another homicide. So for example, 2017 was unusually high. And then 2018, we were well below budget. So that's where we are right now, with half the year gone.
Yeah, it's a lot of money for overtime. Anyway, council, have any questions for the overtime?
Could you just explain again what the relationship between this, you said the state, there's a fixed number that is provided by the state or mandated by the state, or what did you say about that?
For what?
You said $150,000.
No, we budget. We have a line number in our budget of $150,000 that goes through budget proportionment every year. And when the budget, which the departments create budgets, we submit them, they're reviewed. Tom DiPietro's on the committee, the treasurer's on the committee, and then that's how we create our annual budget. So it's not a law or written anywhere, it's just that's what's been decided for the department.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't get to set that number. That's number is what's provided to me, and I have to operate within my budget. I do the best I can.
This, I don't know, this budget come from council or just a committee member of the, like, Tom and other, who is in the committee?
It's the council president, the treasurer, and myself will sit down and we will negotiate. We'll talk about the different budgets, and then they're submitted for you, Alderman, to vote on.
I got you. Okay. Okay, number six. How many officers are active on the duty now? And how many are retiring soon?
Okay, the we have 24 members. Our charter has a maximum of 26. It's been put in the Hudson City Charter, maximum of 26. We have one officer who's put in retirement, will be off the books at the end of the year, maybe a little bit into next year. We have one officer that's on extended sick leave, has been so for a number of years. And we have one officer that's a cadet she's going to graduate in July, number one in her class.
All right, now, before I go number seven on agenda, council have any new business?
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, how you doing, Malachi?
Malachi, yeah.
How you doing, boss? I just remind me, how many officers are there in Hudson currently?
There's 25, I believe.
We have 25. We have one on extended sick leave and one recruit at the academy.
Okay. And that's all full time?
Yes, sir.
All right. Chief, I have another question. How much is the licensing fee for the body cam?
Hang on. Let me look it up, Duan. Licensing fee can vary from $180 to $250 annually.
And the cost of the camera?
Each camera is about $800, and storage costs is about $562.
Stores mean like a cloud?
Yes, that's why we opted for these, because a proprietary system would use up so many terabytes, the Hudson could never afford to have body cameras. So that's why we use the cloud storage.
Okay. All right. Council, any new business?
I guess either I could read the letter that we received into the minutes, or I don't know. I think there might be people here who are involved in, who are authors of the letter. So I guess
before you read the letter, let me ask, let me do the number seven on agenda. I think that thing is involved with your letter, I believe, right? The agenda number seven?
Well, seven is, what do I think of the 10% cut?
10% cuts and, yes, and... the new police reform, what do you think about it?
Well, what I'm going to say is going to be anticlimactic. I'm going to work with whatever budget the city council presents me with. I'll be a team player, and whatever is formulated for this department, we'll do the best we can with what we have, period. Not my position to make laws or for the city. Whatever money that is bestowed upon this department, I'll see it spent the best we can and most efficiently we can. So in that regard, I don't have much more to say other than that.
Okay.
I guess the one I was trying to say, do you feel that that 10% is fair?
Not my position to say what's fair. I work for you. You folks determine what's fair. So I'll take whatever is given to me, whether it's $1 or $1 million, and we're going to do the best we can to provide, you know, public safety.
Thank you.
Hi, Rebecca. Rebecca?
Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
So, okay, this is a letter that came to the council from Hudson for Social Justice. Questions for Hudson Common Council Committee on the Police. Statement of purpose. We firmly believe that the council and mayor can and must take action on defunding the Hudson Police Department in order to allocate more resources for the social programs that uplift this city's citizenry. The questions, and there, so there's 12 questions. Where does each committee member stand on defunding the police? We would like to ask each member to share their perspective. I guess I'm just going to read the whole letter and then, because, yeah. So, two, we understand there are currently 25 cops in the...
Rebecca, if you want, I can answer. I'm prepared some answers. If you want to ask a question and I can answer, maybe that'd be faster.
Yeah, I think that's better, Rebecca. Just ask the question.
All right.
I'll do the best I can to respond. I got these things this morning, so I answered as quickly as I thought I could.
Okay, great. So the second question... the first question is for the committee. So I guess we could each share our perspective on that question. Where do we stand on defunding the police? Would anybody like to go first?
Rebecca, if I may, could we can we come back to that question? I think it was a really good thing to ask of each of the committee members, but if we could go through what is being directed to the chief, since we're sort of on a roll, and then come back to that in each points of view.
So number two is, so there are currently 25 officers in the Hudson Police Department. What are their roles? Is an organizational chart available? And then secondly, who are the communications officers and what is their role on the force?
Okay, so addressing question two, we do have a chart, an organizational chart that we can make available to you. The Hudson City Charter states that HPD can have a maximum of 26 officers. Currently we have 24 members, one chief, two lieutenants, four sergeants, one detective sergeant, four detectives, and 12 patrol officers. Of the 24, one officer has been on extended sick leave, he'll probably be retiring. One sergeant will be retiring in July. One officer is recovering from shoulder surgery, and one officer is a cadet in training that we expect to graduate in July.
And the communications officer, is there... one.
Okay, so they man, I'm sorry, I forgot about that. They man, we have four full-time communications officers. They are communications specialists, I should say, and they man the radio. And when you call HPD, they're the ones that answer the phone.
Thanks. So question three, based on publicly available data, the Hudson Police Department is approximately 18% larger than the police forces of both Kingston and Poughkeepsie when examined proportionally to each city's population. We've been told that police force size is dictated by state mandate. What is this state mandate and what demographic is used to make the determination of local police size?
Okay, to my knowledge, as a chartered city, we're only required to have a police force. The Hudson City Charter now dictates the maximum size. The size of the department has not varied over recent years. I have a 1955 HPD poster in my office here that shows 23 sworn members. The size has most likely been linked to the need and calls for service. Your examples of Kingston Police, which is one officer per 333 citizens, and Poughkeepsie PD, which is one officer per 304 citizens, very close to our ratio, which is one officer per 300 citizens. Factoring out long-term injured officers, and also a contributing factor to HPD size might be our crime weight, our weekend tourist population not reflected in the service, and calls for services. FBI statistics shows that Hudson is the 13th most dangerous city to live in upstate New York, while the other departments you referenced, Poughkeepsie is 22nd, and Kingston did not even make the list.
Question four. Section 8 of the mayor's executive order states that, quote, policing of social issues should be limited or removed from the scope of police responsibilities, end quote. Will the redistribution of these responsibilities allow for a significant reduction of police force size? Secondly, how will this assignment be enforced?
Rebecca, probably this is best directed to the police commissioner. We'll have to weigh the costs of a program like Hudson Cares and see how it affects the police force size. Policy for the reassignment of domestic violence, mental health, substance abuse, and homeless issues to other agencies has not been developed. So we'll have to evaluate how this will affect the department as we develop policy.
Great. And one of the things that I definitely look forward to is hearing more from the commissioner about the evaluation and assessment of the program and the size. So, great. Question five. Section 5 of the mayor's executive order calls for the prohibition of no-knock warrants, quote, where they are not essential to protect public safety, end quote. What does it mean for this to be an essential course of action, and who decides those criteria?
My response would be that only the county judges can determine whether to issue a warrant and whether it requires notice or not. So beyond that, I don't have an answer for you.
Okay. Question 6. What is the racial makeup of the Hudson Police Department?
The police department has one African-American patrol officer, one African-American detective, and one African-American sergeant. We have 5 females on our force of 24.
Right.
Okay. 7, have there been any recorded instances of violence committed by our police force here in Hudson in the past year or more? For example, Detective Kaiser's behavior in 2011-12 as presented in the 2014 Jermaine McRae case.
Okay, so the answer, first answer is no, there hasn't been. Secondly, any questions regarding the civil case should be referred to the city attorney or even the former police chief.
Okay. Question 8, do any current Hudson police officers have a record of misconduct, especially using excessive force?
New York State Legislature recently enacted legislation that authorizes me now to answer this question. We have one officer with an incident of misconduct, and we have no current officers on the force that have an excessive force record.
So you're saying that the one officer is a past member of the force?
Am I on there? Can you hear me, Rebecca?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. What I'm saying is, you asked about misconduct. We have one officer with one record of misconduct, and we have no current officers with a record of physical violence.
Okay. Section 9 of the mayor's executive order details new data reporting requirements for the police beginning this July on use of force incidents, duty to intervene actions, arrests, emotionally disturbed person calls, and drug overdose related calls. Is past data on these metrics publicly available? If not, are there plans for making this historical data accessible?
Okay, the new executive order will cause the creation of a new monthly form, and which I'm prepared to present to the mayor and the city council. As a business record, it'll be foilable and made available, as will any historic document.
Okay. Question 10. Article 14 of the police union contract describes the police chief's ability to conduct up to 3 random drug alcohol tests for all officers. There does not appear to be equivalent outlines for procedures relating to the regular review of misconduct reporting. Why is drug and alcohol abuse singled out and elevated as something police can take action on without consultation of the union, but not harassment or misconduct?
Okay, this was a contract negotiated by the city, so you have to refer that to the city attorney. But in a case of an officer failing a drug test, he would be subject to charges and representation as afforded him in a contract.
Mm-hmm. Question 11. Article 28 of the police union contract allows an officer the right to review their personal file at any time and add responses to any adverse material or report in the file. In addition, officers can request the removal of negative reports or reprimands from their file after 1 year. If the department refuses, the officer may bring a grievance under the contract. This provision appears to obstruct the department's ability and, by extension, the city's ability to hold officers accountable for misconduct and abuse of power, but the extent an officer's ability to clean their record is unclear. Can committee members clarify on any limits to the definition of negative reports or reprimands in reference to this article?
It's another one that was, again, negotiated by the city. This contract was negotiated by the city, and you're going to have to talk to the city attorney for interpretation of that section. We do know that under state law now, and this criminal procedure law, any kind of record of misconduct has to be revealed to the defense attorney through the judges.
And the final question, are officers on the Hudson Police Department given access to paid leave while under investigation?
I don't believe that civil service law precludes suspension with pay. In any event, the police commissioner ultimately has a decision involving suspension.
Okay. And that's the questions for now of the Thank you, Duan. Duan, you're muted.
Thank you, Rebecca. Okay. I'm going to open up for public comments on question. Please.
Duan.
Yes. You got a question?
I'm sorry to interrupt. I think this might be the appropriate time just to, with respect to the letter that we received, that everyone gives their point of view on the defunding question. I for one, kept deferring it, and I don't want it to fall off the table or fall out of discussion. So it seems like this would be the appropriate time to.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay.
You know, then we will have completed the points made in the letter. Since I so boldly said we should talk about this, I'll volunteer to go first and jump into the fray. Okay. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Like everybody, I think that the recent conversations that we've had in Hudson and have been across the state and certainly across the country have brought to light the incredible need to reassess our police forces and to recommit ourselves as the 21st century policing document that was developed over in President Obama's era, talking about the police mindset being one of guardian as opposed to warrior. And I think that the idea of defunding and discussing how we might better create that guardianship of our society is the time has come. Time has past come. But here we are, and we can only deal with what we've got when we've got it. And I really look forward to what Kamal has done in terms of his order and the development of the commission to reconciliation. Hopefully that will assess some city needs. It might clarify how we interact with the county, what our responsibilities are, what the county's responsibilities are, how we can provide greater services in the areas of a mental and emotional health for our citizens, homelessness, adult services, services for the elderly. There's a whole gamut of things. I'll stop there.
Yeah, thanks. How about Rebecca?
I too hope that we will explore really creative ways to look at how to redirect some of the funds that are available. I mean, I understand that there's a contract in place, and I understand that there are also alternatives to unions, actually, which is kind of a tricky thing to say, maybe, but I am curious to find out how we could really recreate the structure of services, social services to our city. And so I'm, you know, sympathetic to idealistic approaches as well as to pragmatics.
Yeah. Thank you. How about Malaika?
Hello?
Yeah, Malaika. You got to say something?
Well, I just wanted to just talk briefly on, you know, just that word that, you know, I know people talk about defunding, you know, like it's a terrible thing that's happening, that's taking place, which I feel that, you know, which we know that bringing in other services to accommodate the police, I think it's actually a brilliant idea. And I believe that, like Kamal, the mayor was saying, we do need the police department. We still need the city to, you know, act in accordance with each other. So we need each other. We're a community. And I think, but we do need to redefine and restructure, rebuild, and, you know, just come up with just a different way, because, I mean, I know nationally, worldly, things are changing, but when it comes to Hudson, we're a small knit community, but we always seem to, you know, be able to manage and do things a little different than everybody else. And I want to myself just continue doing that. You know, I would like to hear, you know, just some ideas, even from the chief, of, you know, where do he think is best suited to bring some of those fundings to? What would be, you know, ideal? What would be the best areas, just in his understanding, or, you know, not just his understanding, but anybody's understanding, you know, where else should we be bringing those fundings to bring on just prevention? I mean, because I think prevention is, you know, number one is needed. I think it's necessary. I mean, as far as the, you know, the what is it, the 10% that's, you know, being asked, you know, I think it's reasonable. And I just feel, you know, I appreciate the chief for, you know, just bringing up being a team player, and he's just willing to accommodate, you know, whatever the council is willing to, you know, put as a base, and I appreciate that. And I know you know, you all feel the same. But, you know, I think as far as the mayor, he's doing a terrific job and, you know, just, you know, being active and you know, being productive to the situation. And again, you know, I love my community and police are a part of the community. And so I think we have to, you know, not just act rational. We can't, you know, act like, you know, a different, another city. We have to, you know, do things, you know, how we see fit as a community in Hudson. And, you know, not just jump off the ledge and, you know, be so just mad at everybody. But just remember that, you know, this is our community. This is Hudson. We get to actually decide how things are to be done. And, you know, we just have to look at the big picture. And I just feel that, you know, it's, you know, more community family knit than, you know, anything else.
That's good, brother. Always smoke.
That's all I have.
Sit down.
Thank you, Malika. Okay. Pretty much everybody said that's very nice, you know, and I agree with all of council member, whatever they said. And whatever is going on, current situation is very bad. And I know Hudson is small city and our town is much better than other city, I believe. And, you know, and our policing and the mayor, everybody doing their good job, and 10%. I'm okay with that, I think, but we can do something better and we have to study more and get, like, you know, make it more safer and better for our community. So we need more study. That's it.
Agreed.
Okay. Anybody else, council member?
I did just want to reiterate my hope that the police commissioner will be available to talk to us about an assessment. I'm pretty sure that that's something that's underway or has been requested, you know, just in terms of the size and the overall picture of what we do call law enforcement. But one person in the chat pointed out that other countries, I'll quote her, other countries speak of guardians of the peace, policing by consent, rather than law enforcement. So anyways, I just would like to reiterate that.
Okay, I'm gonna
the police commissioner, I'm sorry, the one, okay. He has been working on an assessment, I want to say since February, so that'll be available, you know, once he's finished. But I guess for me, the most important thing is building this reconciliation committee so that we're able to give the police commissioner or the chief, like, you know, support from the community on making these changes. You know, if the commissioner is going to go out and be progressive, he's going to need, you know, a lot of support, because this is something that hasn't been done before, especially, you know, in Hudson.
Hey, Duane, may I speak? This is Calvin Lewis, 3rd Ward Alderman. I respect all of the viewpoints shared thus far. With that said, to come. And I also commend the efforts of the mayor. I think, you know, in regards to the 10% decrease to the police budget, you know, I think that is the beginning of a longer conversation, provided, you know, I do think it's one that's deemed necessary. And, you know, provided, you know, I think this is what progressive government looks like, you know, provided there is, you know, a national issue, if you will, for lack of a better phrase, when viewing law enforcement. And I think a lot of people today are looking for an avenue to actively participate in law enforcement, but also feel included. And so, you know, I'm all for working with, you know, allies and like-minded folks, such as the commissioner. I had the chance to hear some of what he entails to do in order to reestablish a relationship with the community. I think oftentimes the paradigm when looking at law enforcement is viewed as they are, you know, at the climax of the paradigm, and the civilian is at the bottom. But as the chief pointed out earlier, you know, he's at the will of the council, therefore the people. And so, you know, I'll just keep it there. And, you know, I look forward to more fruitful conversations that are, you know, transparent and as inclusive as can be. And, you know, again, I appreciate the time of everyone who is participating in on this call, because again, I think our community, as well as nationally, I just think folks are looking for a way to be a part of the solution rather than living with, you know, plagued issues.
Right.
So
thank you, Duan. Thank you, Calvin. Any more council member, like not for the police committee, other than police committee, council member?
I think Rebecca had another question.
I was just going to bring up something that's in the chat, but if you're about to turn to that, then I can. I don't have to.
What is that?
It's a question from a citizen in the chat, which says, I wrote an email to the police committee on the chief's current waiver and would like the committee to discuss this. How does one get a waiver? Why is one needed?
Chief, can you answer this, please?
Yeah, so there's a lot I want to say here, and I agree with so much that's been said. You know, I haven't missed the police committee meeting in 7 years. And through many of them, I've often noticed that I would love to be the chief of a 12-man department or a 13-man department. I'd rather have 10 well-paid, highly spirited, effective police officers that are well equipped than 400, you know, naked ones. They're overworked. You know, as calls for service go down, and I agree with what I think Linda Mussman said, that a large budget is probably not sustainable. If we can't offer folks the root cause of crime, if we can't offer jobs, and this is not all on the back of the police department. We have to come up with a larger plan so people can live their lives and live in neighborhoods that are safe and crime-free and drug-free. So those are the solutions we're looking for. But if anyone thinks that I'd like to be the commander, you know, of a 100-man police department, forget about it. That's not what I want here. We don't want to live in that type of town. I've said it repeatedly. Anyone that's gone to these meetings over the years, I've said it time and time again. We're only the size that we are owing to the calls for service. Now, in the matter of my waiver, I'm glad you brought that up, because there's been so much misinformation out there that I'm a very rich person. And as I told the committee chairman today when he met me in my office, he's welcome to look at all my W-2s since I've been here. But the way it works is I use my state pension, which I get intermittently because sometimes I suspend it. But I use it to supplement my pay here in Hudson. So what I mean by that is when I assumed office here and was given that opportunity, the chief was making $117,000 a year. So I signed a contract for $80,000, which means if I did collect $80,000 over 7 years, I would have saved the city somewhere in the neighborhood of $339,754 by taking reduced pay to be your chief, which I'm happy to do. Don't want to meddle. But what I'm saying is my 211 waiver is not granted by the mayor. It's not granted by the alderman. It's granted by the New York State Civil Service. So what they do is they evaluate my position here. They have a hearing, and there's times I have my waiver and there's times I don't. Currently, I've applied for a waiver and have not heard back. So right now I'm at $35,000 a year. But I'm glad that you brought it up. I'll be glad to provide an explanation of my pay. And that's it. But I did offer up, and if anyone thinks wants to check my figures, I've invited the committee chairman to come over and inspect every one of my W-2s. So we know the information is accurate, unlike what I've seen online.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Okay, who else over here? Hey, Tom.
Hold on a second.
Tom.
Yes.
If I want to do public, how are you going to do it? I mean, it's kind of...
Anybody who wants to chime in?
Raise your hand.
Raise your hand would help. Or there is an emoji for raising their hand in the chat room.
All right. So I'm going to open up meeting for the public question and comments. And just raise emoji. And we're going to pick from there.
Yeah, if you press the participants icon at the bottom, there's a raise hand feature.
Ah, here we go. Dewan, you want me to tell you who's raising their hand? And
yes, please.
Okay, because so first we have, the first one I saw was Quentin Cross.
Okay, everyone going to get one question, not two, okay? So make sure they get done you asked. Quentin Cross, you on.
Chief, my question is to you. You know, I don't doubt anybody should get the money that they deserve. I support unions. I support working families. I am the co-chairman of the Working Families Party here locally. My question, though, is what was the reason for the waiver? Why is one, what is the reason? Why is one needed? Not the money. Why is one needed?
Okay, so I was brought here by the mayor and the commissioner at the time with certain goals, Quentin, in mind. And I feel that I can list, and I'll talk all day about what we've accomplished in 7 years. Very, very proud. This is why when we have incidents like this in the nation, you see things like our policy being out in front. And you see that we're the first full-time police agency with cameras, even though we didn't have the money for it. I think we've done some great things, introducing civil service requirements for promotions, and outfitting the new station, even though we didn't have the money at times, getting new equipment on lease and doing cost-cutting measures. So that's why I was brought in here, Quinn, and that's why the hearing board decided, you know, that guy can get his pension and he can get, albeit less, a salary. So the reason why it's been applied, the city applied on my behalf, is to accomplish these very goals, which I'm very close to accomplishing. We've knocked off quite a bit. When I stood on in the firehouse there and gave my various promises, you know, we've accomplished quite a few of them. Now, that's not to say that it's not a dynamic police force. There's obviously new issues to deal with. And that's what we're working on now. It takes a lot of energy and cooperation and work. But There's times I've gotten a waiver, there's times I haven't. But that's in essence, they evaluate me, the state evaluates me, and they say, hey, this guy's deserving or this guy's not deserving. And I operate it there. And then whatever they decide, I respect. And if it means working for $35,000, I've done it because we want to complete these goals.
Okay, next up is Stephanie Monceau. Stephanie? You there? Where are you?
Hi, everybody. Thank you. Thank you all for your service, Mayor and Council members and Chief. It's good to hear this discussion. I really appreciate the initiative that the Mayor is unrolling about reform. I do want to talk about trainings because I clicked on the link in the document. I see that there are reports that training doesn't work, but training only works if people are willing to commit to making changes. And in addition to community discussions, I still feel that implicit bias training, cultural sensitivity training, mental health checks, and trauma impact training is an essential part of any licensed professional who has dealings with the public. No school teacher, no nurse, no mental health person has, you know, gets to deal with other human beings without these kinds of trainings. And even me, a circus person, like working with kids, teaching juggling, I do these trainings on a constant basis because I want to be better at being a human with other humans. The only way this can happen is like daily practice within the department. And as amazing as the mayor's initiatives are and the duty to intervene, that has to happen when implicit bias is being reinforced between officers and their interactions with the public. Officers need to call each other out on those things, and the public needs to call it out. I've witnessed it. I've called it out. And that is the crux of this matter. It's so deep within us that we don't know it's there, and you have to want to eradicate it. That's why training and having the intervention of knowledgeable individuals who ask the questions and raise the issues has got to be a part of this reform. You have to look at it like smoking. You have to want to quit, and it's going to hurt really bad, but you really have to want it. Otherwise, doing one training is not going to solve anything. Again, like there's a lot of different ways to approach this, but I believe like a big, hard approach to it is going to be necessary. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next up is Megan Reinhardt.
Hello. So my question is, what determines if a phone call goes to, when a phone call is made to 911, what determines if it goes to the police department versus EMS, MCAT, or Twin Counties Recovery Services or other social services? I heard the police chief mention that 58 out of 66 emotionally disturbed calls were secured. I'm guessing that means they were arrested. I'm not really sure, but I want to know basically what determines when a phone call is going where, and it seems to me like they're going too often to the police department when they should be handled by an alternative resource. And in general, I think that sounds like a high number, that 58 out of 66.
Chief.
Yeah, Megan, thank you for the question. 911 calls go to the county 911 dispatch center, where the dispatchers are trained to triage the different calls and call the various agencies. So they do that. We don't arrest people for mental illness, but we do facilitate, whether with us or with a social worker, their transportation to treatment. So we don't call it an arrest. We do whatever the situation involves, depending on the person's condition.
So could we find out more about the training? Like, I guess I'm curious what that training entails.
Megan, one question.
That was an add-on question. So, and I also talking to, I forget who asked the question, Stephanie. So look, the city built a classroom in our station. We insisted to have a classroom. We did that because we understand the importance of ongoing training. You know, when we brought Tristy Loving in, the noted author, to talk about implicit bias, you know, folks didn't even know what that was talking about. So we were ahead of the game on that. So, yes, you can probably get more information about how a 911 dispatcher triages, but having been to the scene of these 941 cases, yes, we bring whatever assets we can bring to bear to secure the person safely. And Stephanie, we are a big believer in training, and we'll devote as much resources as we can afford to training.
Thank you, Chief. Next one.
Tiffany Garriga.
Tiffany,
you there?
Hello, good evening. My question is for the Chief. For years, the people in the city, particularly the people of color, have been looking for officers to reflect the community. So my question to you, Chief, since you've been hired, how many people of color have you hired or has been hired to the Hudson Police Department since you've been on the force?
Okay, so you know, Tiffany, that we're restricted by civil service requirements. We can only hire from the list that's established. I have recruited African-Americans who've gone to jobs, better paying jobs elsewhere. But I am proud of the fact that we have our first African-American NCO, female. Also the first detective African-American happened under my watch. And also the female representation is higher than any department in the Hudson Valley percentage wise. So unfortunately, recruiting is where we could do better. We've tried various things over the years through Operation Unite, Greg Mosley's program, to try to get local kids involved, especially minority kids that want to join the police department. Unfortunately, our recruitment efforts haven't been that successful at all because folks have gone on to other jobs and other agencies like the state police. So we are restricted by the civil service lists, but I'm also very proud of the representation that we have and the job they do.
Well, Chief, I have an add-on as well. What can we do to change those policies? Because I was told about Hispanic people being passed off, other young African-American from the community being passed off. So what can we do as a council to get these individuals and more hired? Because the people are crying, the people are screaming, and we need to do something about it. We need a police department that reflects all of the community.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly.
So what can we do?
Well, like I said, we have to recruit people from the neighborhood, from the Hudson, from City of Hudson, or anywhere that's more representative. When I get a civil service list, or now the commissioner, you know, is in charge of hiring, when he gets a civil service list, he's bound by who's on that list. And unfortunately, that's the rules of engagement. I wish I could go down, talk to a young person. We've had some interns here from the city that I'd love to say, hey, I want to hire this kid today. But I'm restricted by all the requirements that New York State sees. If that were the case, Tiffany, it would be a much easier process. I understand why we have civil service, but we are bound by that, and probably for good historical reasons. But we have attempted, we've tried, and we've done the best we can. Now, perhaps more funding or more ability to get some kind of recruiting program might be helpful. But I tell you, it's going to be hard to hire any police these days.
Okay, Chief, on this question, what's the age limit for hiring?
Meeting.
That is the meeting, so it is a Zoom meeting.
Chief?
Zoom. I'm sorry, Duane, I don't know if I was muting or not, whatever's going on here. It's 21 to 35.
Oh, 21 to 35, okay.
If you're interested,
No, I'm over that. Anyway. All right, next.
Can we get a list of the individuals from Hudson or around the area that was passed on for whatever reason so we can try to help bring them back?
Absolutely. You can go over to 401. You can request a list of the active candidates thing. But candidates list is over at 401, Department of Civil Service.
Dewan, can you get that list, please? To the chair of the police.
Okay, Tiff. I'm going to work on it. All right, next. Thank you, Tiffany.
Margaret Morris. Margaret Morris?
All right, next one.
I'm unmuted now. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so this question is for the chief. So, as we look at incidents or episodes, I think one of the systemic issues in policing, not in Hudson specifically, but in the United States in general, is that there is a burden placed on the police to address a range of situations, volatile situations, behavioral health, mental health, substance abuse, domestic violence. While we talk about, this defund the police approach and trying to put more money and more resources into social services, social workers, psychologists, and so forth, what are your thoughts on how to integrate the police force and the officers with partners in social services, because it's not really realistic to think that if a violent situation is unfolding, which has at its root a mental health component, you can't really expect that a social worker is going to go there and deal with that alone. So what are your thoughts on how to reimagine policing by consent and community policing, where the police folks who are trained in security and safety can work with social service folks who are trained in mental health and counseling? How would you imagine that unfolding?
So what I've said in numerous meetings is, you know, Hudson Police is different, or it's in a bind kind of, because you're dealing with a department that isn't a tiny department of four or five part-time officers that I can convert completely to social programs and community policing. Like, I can't say, hey, you four or five officers, we're going to do just, you know, be out in the public and do that and let someone else answer the calls. Then the other thing is, we're not quite large enough to devote a whole platoon of officers devoted to community policing. They've tried that in Hudson.
Oh.
What was that?
I don't know.
So what happens is, we're kind of in between. So I'd like to view our police officers, and this is why I'm okay with the panels that the mayor suggested, because I think because we're not large enough to devote a lot of people to that, our officers have to be more or less quasi community policemen, each one of them. So we have a very close relationship with the social workers in our town, every aspect, from firemen to every department. There's one right out my window here that we have a relationship with, Twin Counties down on Power Avenue, and every aspect of social services. So I agree in principle to what you're saying, is that at what point are we going to train officers to do everything? Are we going to be performing surgery soon, you know, developing rockets? You know, at some point we have to get out of the, you know, being everything to everyone and focus on what we can do. So, but the question is now, of course, is what resources and policies and things like this are all going to have to be developed. So, but I'm on board. I want to be a team player. And if we can parse off some of our responsibilities to specialized, trained experts, of course, that's going to benefit everybody. So so that's why I'm okay with what this conversation, what's going on.
Tom, I would like to clarify my question for the chief. So, chief, what I was thinking really was, the police cannot be expected to be social workers and mental health professionals. That's not their training. Well, I guess what I was getting at was, do you have any vision of, you have a scenario where there is domestic violence situation going on? A social worker can't go out there on their own unprotected. Police officer on their own is also not necessarily the appropriate. Do you have any vision for how the police department could partner with trained social workers and social service folks, so that when there is a call that may require safety and security, there may be guns involved, whatever, but you have both a behavioral health person and a police officer working as partners in those volatile situations? That's really what I was trying to get at, because this whole defund the police thing, to me, is not really about eliminating the police force. It's about reimagining how resources are spent and how this whole unit is reconstructed to include both safety and security and behavioral health issues. So I guess that's what I'm kind of getting at.
Well, Margaret, I'm sorry. I apologize for not understanding your first question. First of all, that's old news. We've been going with social workers to sites for years upon years here. The social workers will stop by the station here, and we'll accompany them to high-risk situations. you know. So we've been doing that. Our guys, every member of this department has gone on dozens of those. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's something we've been doing for quite a long time.
That answers it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next up is Dave Marston.
Thanks, Tom. Say, I just wanted to thank the chief for being an asset in this conversation and really listening to the community and reminding us that the police department works for us. And Calvin mentioned that as well. I think what we need to see as well is some real substantive recommendations from our committee members. How do you envision really putting into policy, putting into practice the ideas that you spoke about? I think the mayor got in front of this and said, here are, you know, 5-6 actionable things that we're going to do to try and reform or to try and tackle some of these questions that are long overdue and being asked. I wonder if our committee can put in that same amount of work and say, where can we act? The next committee meeting next July, September, BEA is already moving into budget. We got to answer these questions sooner than later and really start thinking about, where do we want to allocate our resources? How can we help the chief? When he says he works for us, he's saying, well, I need your leadership too. And I think we really need to focus on that.
Thank you, Dave. We're going to work on it.
Dominic wants to ask a question.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, Dom.
Okay. Chief, real quick, just to clarify, you mentioned calling 911. 911, when you call with a cell phone, that goes to the 911 center. And then if you call 911 from Hudson, from a landline, that goes to the department, correct?
Now, the 911 switching all goes to the 911 center. That was a cost-saving measure taken 5 or 6 years ago. So even cellular 911, payphone 911, landline 911 is going to go out to the county dispatch center who will triage the call.
Okay, so if you get a call from 911 for an emotional disturb that the rescue squad had went into, you guys are still called because they don't go in until the scene is safe, correct?
Yeah, I believe it's in their policy. So if they're in a dangerous, they're dispatched to a dangerous EMS call, we'll clear the area, they'll call us, we'll clear the area before the EMTs can go in and treat. And we've been working with those guys for years.
Right, and you've also had some successful cases when you transported to CMH with no issues with individuals that needed help, correct?
Yeah, we jumped the call. In other words, we hear an EMS call go out to Lower Union Street. We're going to get there many times before the ambulance. We have, and it's nothing about the best ambulance squad, but we actively listen to the radio. If we know there's a heart attack, we just had one down at Hudson Terrace. We're going to be there before. Or Narcan or something like that. So yes.
And you're also called many times to CMH for issues, correct, after the fact.
Yeah, you're absolutely.
Back to CMH. Yeah.
It doesn't matter if a trooper brings in someone or a Greene County patient or the CMH just needs a hand, security needs something. Yeah, we generate a lot of calls up to the hospital.
So moving forward, however this works out for eliminating some of your tasks, it's still going to be very important for the officers to have the training, whether it's, you know, to be proactive, because you never know at any given time when one of your officers are going to have to be the first on the scene, just because the nature of you guys are 24/7, some other agencies are not. And logistically, so the training's still going to have to be there for your officers to handle some of these issues, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dom. Thank you, too. I'm going to take 3 more calls.
Well, there's no more hands up, so.
Okay, so any more questions from council, or Can I have a motion? For adjourn?
Okay. Malachi.
Okay, Malachi. And who seconded?
Rebecca.
Okay. All right. So thank you, Chief, and all listener. And stay safe.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody.
And good night.
Good night.